As a software engineer, chances are you've crossed paths with MongoDB at some point, whether you're building an app for millions of users or just figuring out your side hustle. It's the most popular non-relational database. MongoDB is intuitive and incredibly easy for development teams to use. Now, with MongoDB Atlas, you can take advantage of MongoDB's flexible document data model as a fully automated cloud service. MongoDB Atlas handles all the costly database operations and admin tasks that you'd rather not spend time on, like security, high availability, data recovery, monitoring, and elastic scaling. Try MongoDB Atlas for free today. Visit www.mongodb.com/cloud to learn more. That's mongodb.com/cloud. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Tiffany Ashley Bell. She's the founder and executive director of The Human Utility. It's a platform to bring people together from around the world, help people in Detroit and Baltimore with their water bills, and you've helped about 1,000 families now?
Yes, that's correct.
That's amazing. And what does this mean? You're a Y Combinator-backed not-for-profit. I thought Y Combinator wanted to make the next Facebook billionaire, but you're a nonprofit.
Right. I mean, they want to, but they also recognize that there's an opportunity to use some of the learnings that they've had from for-profits like, you know, Dropbox and Airbnb and others that they can use to like help nonprofits, basically, especially like having like a metrics-based way of operating and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you went to Howard in computer science, and you worked in Ruby on Rails and iOS. And I bumped into you online a long time ago, you know, just coding and doing stuff and moving your way around the world. But then you were what's called a Code for America fellow. What does that mean? And how did you go from you're both a programmer, but you're also kind of politically involved?
Yeah, I mean, so Code for America is an organization that, again, like it's funny, a lot of things that I've done over the last probably going on 10 years now have happened a lot because of Twitter. And so I ran another startup before Code for America and before The Human Utility called Pencil UN, where we did online appointment scheduling. But that didn't do so well. So at a certain point, that needed to be shut down. And I was looking for something else to do, basically. And Code for America literally followed me on Twitter. And it was kind of like, oh, you know, this is kind of interesting. It's a year-long fellowship, basically. Or at least the way it was structured previously. They've changed their programs at this point. But the way it was structured when I was there in 2014, they took teams of three technologists. So each team was composed of a designer, a developer, and a person who did user interface and user experience research. And they put this team into, at the time, 10 different cities in the United States. And I think there may have been an international team, but 10 different cities in the United States at least. And you're goal was to go into the city and help people in city government discover some problem or some problems that you could use technology to help citizens with. So I was with Team Atlanta, and our team ended up working on a couple of things or a few things. One was improving the situation around what happens when you get a ticket in Atlanta for something, because the way that it used to work was that in Atlanta, or at least it still works that way probably, but anytime you get a ticket in Atlanta, you have to go to court to deal with that matter. So if you had like a broken taillight that you got a ticket for, you had to go to court for that. But people were missing their court dates because you didn't get your court date assignment the same day that you got the ticket. It would come at some other time. And they literally had like city council members who had been arrested because they had not shown up in court, basically, over small things or whatnot.
Because they never knew when to get in?
Right. Like they would tell you, but it wouldn't be consistent. You'd have to go to some website or something or call and figure out when. So the team built something that would text you when your court date was supposed to be. Another thing we worked on was like designing a new website for the procurement department because, you know, the city of Atlanta is a really popular city to do business with, but they didn't have a good way of like publishing opportunities and like giving you a sense of what they've also offered in the past as things to do business with them through. So we built a new website for that kind of thing or whatnot. And that's pretty much what all the teams did. They all went into different cities and picked out different problems that needed or could be helped by some kind of like really quick, cleverly implemented technology solution to help citizens out.
You know, it's interesting to think about how, of course, we all want to use technology to improve lives, to help people. But when you start poking around in local government, you know, small scale things. Some, you know, with all due respect to all of our hardworking people in government and local government, the solutions that they have and the technology they have and the gaps can be filled by pretty straightforward bits of workflow, not rocket science. We don't need machine learning to make it easier for someone to find out, you know, when to come and pay their parking ticket.
Exactly. You don't. You mean you're totally right. But I think one thing that I saw during that stint, and partially before too, because I have previous experience working with a federal government contractor, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people in government, period, who know how to buy and look for solutions mm-hmm. like, you know, what people like listening to this podcast and you and I would know how to mm-hmm. find. So you get these situations where cities have these multi-million dollar contracts to really large corporations that make databases when they could be using probably something a lot simpler in a lot of different places mm-hmm. Because some salesperson came in, convinced a person who didn't know how to buy these things or didn't know that they could just go somewhere and perhaps, you know, download something and still get support. Because I think a lot of people, they want a phone number to call. So they're used to like these big enterprise companies coming in and offering all that sort of stuff at great expense. But they don't realize that it doesn't take all these heavy solutions to do simple things for citizens. And that lack of know-how isn't there in a lot of situations. I mean, and that's what I was seeing in Atlanta. That's what I was seeing, you know, the work that we do at other different cities now with the water project or whatnot, that expertise just isn't there. And so you get people kind of being taken advantage of, and that trickles down to what citizens experience.
The idea that they might be taken for a ride when something that's straightforward or open source or readily available could solve the problem, but then they have to, you know, deal with not just the technology issues, but the speed of government as well as procurement and things like that. It can really hamstring people.
Exactly. I think also one thing that I saw in Atlanta, not to badmouth them, but just like people don't want to get in trouble for the things that they buy. Like, what's the old saying? Like, you never get fired or whatever for buying IBM. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of sort of thinking, because everything that you do is public. And so people scrutinize every decision that you make, and people don't want to get caught out having paid for something that didn't work. And, oh, you've used, you know, $30,000 in taxpayer dollars to pay for something that you didn't even need. So people go, what's safe? But that also translates to being expensive in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of situation.
So you spent that time at Code for America. You're solving problems at the small scale. But then how did you come upon the problem around running water in Detroit and determine that it was on you and your cohorts to fix that?
Yeah, I mean, so the situation with the water was just literally something I read about on Twitter. Like, I, at that time, and I still do this, like every morning when I wake up, I spend at least an hour scrolling through Twitter, just reading what people are talking about and news postings and stuff and whatnot. And actually, I don't do it as much since our political situation has changed, and it's kind of depressing, the kinds of things that you see nowadays. But back then, I saw an article in The Atlantic that talked about how 100,000 people in Detroit were about to have to live without running water, most of them because they couldn't afford the water bills. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was crazy, because I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm literally in the middle of my Code for America fellowship at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking to myself, like, okay, I have been privy to a lot of how City Hall in Atlanta works. Like, we got to walk around with the mayor and different stuff and whatnot. So you see all these decisions being made and how people are thinking. So it made me kind of wonder when I saw that story where they're literally turning off the water of people who, like, I've been to people's houses. They don't have anything. So they're not taking the money and going shopping. They just literally don't have it. But it's like, what kind of decisions in City Hall had to be made where you determine that, you know, yes, we have this woman who she's only living on Social Security, $700 a month. We don't care. We're still going to turn her water off because she owes the city money for the past 3 months because of her water bill. And it just made me kind of wonder. And I thought it was bad. I thought it was really, really, and I'm being polite by saying bad. I thought it was really crappy mm-hmm. that was going on. And so I tweeted about just seeing that. And I just asked, you know, does anybody know anybody who's living in this sort of situation? And it turned into, you know, my co-founder, Christy Tillman, we talked about, like, you know, what could we do to impact this sort of situation? And our thing was, you could go to San Francisco and spend $100 on a bad restaurant in a weekend. Mm-hmm. So why not take that money and, like, find people who needed help with their water bills? And so in the meantime, like, I was poking around on the water company site in Detroit, and I found this 400-page PDF that had a listing of all of their customers who they could not deliver their water bills to via the mail. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, they threw all their information in a PDF and posted it to the site. It's the only thing that was missing was names. Mm-hmm. And for our purposes, stories. And so we, you know, on Heroku through GitHub and just using Google Docs and Google Sheets and Bootstrap, taped together a website and threw that up in a few hours that afternoon to find the people who needed help with their water bills and get their stories. Because again, that PDF had hundreds of people, but we didn't know what their stories were. But we, you know, put that website up and we kind of just waited. We put the website up on a Thursday and we spent that whole weekend like wondering, okay, we've done this thing. Where are the people? But in the meantime, we were tweeting about what we were doing. So it was turning into this thing where people were writing us saying, hey, you know, we want to give to this effort if you find people who need the help. And so it turned into us having to, like, you know, the whole lean startup thing, having to quickly repurpose based off what users are doing, retooling the website to accommodate donors, and then putting a link somewhere else saying that if you need help with your bill, go here. And so that was a Google form that was just a really quick application that we used to find people. And so someone made a posting on Facebook, and that Monday morning we woke up to like 40 people who had applied for help, and it's been going ever since.
Wow. And these are folks who are maybe on disability. They might get one person who was written up in National Geographic in an article about the Human Utility, which was originally named the Detroit Water Project, had a $672 check. That was her monthly check, but her rent was $600. So she had $72 left at the end of the month, and slowly, 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 a little bit at a time, got a $500 overdue water bill. So they came to her house and they turned off the water. And this happened to tens of thousands of people in Detroit because they've got about $90 million in bad debt, and shutoffs were being called in for anyone who owed $150 or more. And it seems like for some people, that's a crushingly huge amount of money. And for other people, like you said, it's a bad meal for four in the Bay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are, you know, as developers, we're used to fairly healthy salaries depending on where you work and what you do. But there are people that, you know, that's their monthly salary, $700 from Social Security. Mm-hmm. That's supposed to pay for rent, food, transportation, clothing, you know, hygiene, all of your basic necessities, including water and electricity bills. And that mathematically just doesn't add up for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So they're doing things like literally, I wouldn't say literally, but like robbing Peter to pay Paul, mm-hmm. where, you know, one of the stories I think about from when we first started was a woman who, I think her name was Marnie, and she had three kids, and she was skimping on her heart medication to stretch out, you know, her doses. I think she was cutting her pills in half or something because she was trying to stretch out that to be able to have the money to pay her water bills. And that's people all, you know, all over this country, actually. It's not just a problem in Detroit and Baltimore. It's kind of one of these, like, low-key, not well-talked-about problems that people are having where basic water service is not affordable. Mm-hmm. And again, people are doing some of the worst things imaginable to get by. So you have literally, you know, Detroit's one of, you know, historically the United States, one of the greatest cities in this country because of its contributions and just the people in general. But you have people living there who are in houses that, you know, they're nice houses by all accounts. They've got infrastructure to do, you know, run water and whatnot. But again, they don't have water. And I've talked to people who have been living in their house, like I said, with pipes and everything else for over a year with no water. And so they've been doing things like using the bathroom in their backyards, mm-hmm. you know, dig a hole like they're in some developing country or something. And this is the United States, the supposed wealthiest country in the world. And this is what people are doing. And so again, our work is to use crowdfunding to round up the dollars that people need to be able to go into the water company and restore dignity to themselves mm-hmm. in a very basic sense. Like if you've got the infrastructure, you should not be using the bathroom in your backyard. You mm-hmm. should not be doing things like, I mean, we had a dialysis patient who was trying to do things with her neighbor's water hose. And obviously that was not helping. Some people, they're walking several blocks to relatives' houses in Detroit to take showers every day. Mm-hmm. Other folks buying cases of water and whatnot. And so also I'll say this, a lot of people know about the situation in Flint with just the water being undrinkable, but the situation in Detroit's kind of related because, you know, Flint originally, the deal was to get the water from Detroit, but Detroit was kind of expensive price tag wise. And so they tried to find another source and that source was polluted. So all this other stuff happened and whatnot. But again, like Flint, you can't drink the water. Detroit, you can drink it, but it's expensive. And, you know, it's just a total terrible situation, even though all that fresh water is right there in Michigan. It's pretty mm-hmm. crazy.
Right. It's come all the way up to their sidewalk and it just can't make it the last, you know, 30 yards because they you know, haven't paid a bill. And when you're living at that level, when you're living on effectively on the margins financially, it can be 1 month where you just had a lousy month. You hurt yourself, you twisted your ankle or whatever. And then suddenly you don't pay that bill. And then you hit a couple of more months of bad luck. Are you intending to pay their water bill forever? Or are you intending to smooth that bump, that life hiccup that caused them to not be able to pay their water bill?
So no, the intention is not for most people to pay their water bills forever. Mm-hmm. We make it pretty clear that like you get assistance once every 18 months, unless there's some really extenuating mm-hmm. circumstances that make it where we have to continue to help you. Mm-hmm. Like, one of our funders is GitHub, and they did a video with us back in the fall where we went and talked to an 87-year-old woman named Helen, and she, you know, she's 87. Mm-hmm. She's not exactly frail, but she's 87. Like, I don't want to seem terrible. People aren't hiring 87-year-olds, and so she would have difficulty doing something to support herself.
It's a lot to ask for her to be a Walmart greeter or whatever. She's 87.
Exactly. And so like we continue to check in on her and we pay her bill, you know, every once in a while if her family can't pitch in or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's a rare situation because it's not supposed to be that we're like, it's like some people like to say promoting dependency. It's just a one-time situation because most people, like you said, you know, you break your ankle, some crazy health, you know, situation comes along, like, you know, some people like, you know, oh, I had to bury my mother and that kind of thing or whatnot. And she didn't have insurance, so it drained me, you know, and that kind of thing. Or other situations, too. It's not just like unfortunate situations in that regard. Like we have a lot of people who work and maybe their hours have been cut or, you know, they've been laid off because they had something to do with whatever remaining manufacturing industry is in Detroit. And those people downsized again. And
yeah, it just takes a moment. It takes a hiccup, and then your life
changes. Exactly.
A big thank you to our sponsors because they make this show possible, and I hope that you support them the way they support us. Progress Software is the creator of the most comprehensive developer toolkit for building modern apps on the market today, Telerik DevCraft. With more than 1,100 Telerik.NET and Kendo UI JavaScript components and controls, you can easily build modern, high-performance web, mobile, and desktop apps, as well as chatbots. The toolset also includes reporting solutions, automated testing and productivity tools, and comes with a range of support options. New this year is a free online training program for all license holders. With this, alongside thousands of demos and source code available, comprehensive documentation, and a full assortment of Visual Studio templates, you'll be up and running with the Progress Telerik and Kendo UI controls in no time. Download a free 30-day trial today at Telerik.com/Hanselman. That's TELERIK.com/Hanselman. Now that you've changed the name from the Detroit Water Project, which people can go and search and find all kinds of great articles 4 and 5 years ago about the project, now you're calling it the Human Utility. Is the intention to stay focused on water or other delinquent bills for things that we would consider to be fundamental to a developed country like electricity?
No, so the focus is staying on water at this point because it's okay. in the United States, at least, it's the only utility that isn't protected in a federal sense. Like, so for example, the census does a survey every year. I think it's called the American Community Survey, where they ask families of different socioeconomic backgrounds, like have they been able to do things like pay bills and how do you get your kids to school and that kind of thing or whatever. But mm-hmm. they ask about, you know, your ability to pay certain utilities, and they break it out by gas and electric. I think those two are separate. And then there's phone bills and there's one other one. But water isn't explicitly included as a thing that they ask you about affording. So the reason why, you know, that's one of the things I want to talk about changing at some point is because if you're not measuring it, you're not fixing it. And when it comes to that kind of information in a federal sense, that's federal money that's not getting appropriated for that purpose. So that's a thing that's not being solved, basically. So, you know, it's issues like that. But we want to focus on water, again, because everything else, there's programs for it. And well, actually, I'll go back and I'll say this. Like, water is protected if it's tied to heating. But if it's not tied to heating, then, you know, you're on your own, basically. So I think water needs its own sort of advocacy.
Mm-hmm. I noticed also when I visit the site, the human utility, and I say I want to help or I want to get involved, or I can say give monthly. In some places, I see that you use technologies like Airtable or like Stripe. When you're building a site like this, did you think to yourself, I'm going to go and use things like Airtable or Google Sheets? Like you said, you started out early on. I see a tweet here. In fact, I'll put in the show notes from 2014 when you were just trying to figure out how to make this thing. How much were you thinking, you know, I'm going to do this with entirely custom code and write it from scratch and Rails versus, you know, there's no reason for the human utility to build a big giant infrastructure when we've got all these other great software as a service solutions out there?
Right. I mean, so part of that at the beginning, at least, was just, this was never supposed to be like an actual long-term thing. We were just putting something up in a weekend, and if it worked out, great. And, you know, if not, okay, we can just leave all this stuff hanging. But, mm-hmm. you know, as we kept seeing people giving and applying for help, we needed to continue to build things. So, especially upon getting accepted to Y Combinator, I ended up, you know, taking my Rails development skills and building out more of the crowdfunding platform. So that's where, you know, Stripe comes in. Mm-hmm. We're hosted on Amazon EC2. What else is in there? We have Twilio that we use for mm-hmm. notifying people once they get accepted in as far as getting help. What else is there? There's MailChimp that, you know, handles things like donor communications and whatnot. So some of this also building custom stuff just came from how we used to work. Like we used to do like a direct match as far as how the money worked. So the system would like, it still does this in some ways, but like not the way it used to. It would match people, you know, in terms of like, hey, you gave $5, here's mm-hmm. the person it should go to and whatnot. So now it's more of a pool of funds basically. But the way it used to work, it was an explicit match. And so that wasn't something that you could buy, basically. So we built that, you know, on our own. And so that was just in there. And that's like a relic. And plus also, like, you know, GoFundMe, there's nothing wrong with them as a platform, despite the fact that they've turned into a healthcare platform, really. But, like, there were a bunch of other scattered sort of crowdfunding efforts for water bills, but there was nothing that had a critical mass of support behind it. Plus, also, you had to kind of, at that time, wait till your campaign got to a certain size to withdraw the money. And mm-hmm. when people come to us, like, they need the money ASAP, basically. So we're able to, you know, collect donations through Stripe. We pay out bills pretty much every single day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that works better for us, basically. And also it allows us, again, to like manage our own sort of donor communication systems and that kind of thing. And then also we built our own case management system, because that's another thing that you could buy off the shelf, but everything mm-hmm. that I was seeing was just like aggressively bad. So like we have our own case management system.
Not just bad, aggressively bad.
Yeah, I mean, I have a thing about like ugly software, and it was all ugly. So it's just like we built our own thing that, again, sits on top of EC2. We've got Elasticsearch behind it. So there's all these like different engineering technologies that are in there that, you know, we use to roll into this thing that helps people.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I see a lot, there's a lot of people on the internet though that are looking for a buck. How do you make sure that someone doesn't abuse your platform and make sure that you send people out to confirm that they're who they are? How do you make sure they're not using this for inappropriate use?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different checks that we run. So one is that when you apply, you have to submit your pay stubs to us if you have some kind of income, or like your social security letters and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You also have to send us your picture ID. So, and you do that, I'll just say this, your picture ID, and you're also your lease or your deed for your property. And your lease, mm-hmm. we look for things like, are you actually responsible for the utility bill? Because a lot of cases, like some people, their landlord was supposed to pay the bill. So that's not a situation that we handle. Mm-hmm. But we ask people to submit that information, and they do that by texting it to us through Twilio. Or they can fax it, and we receive it through HelloFax, and it, you know, gets in our system that way or whatnot. But again, like in building your own case management system, that is all custom through Twilio, where you mm-hmm. can text your photo ID. It shows up on your profile because it's matched by the phone number that you give on your application and whatnot. But then we use all that, and we have a liaison at the water department that we confer with, and we, you know, say, you know, what's this person's history with you all? You know, what do they actually owe? Have they told the truth in terms of them being shut off and that kind of thing? And if anything seems fishy, we either won't help or we'll delay helping until we get more information about each case, basically. And we have a pretty thorough process for checking on people that, you know, mm-hmm. we've had some people get through in the past, but that's because we didn't have as thorough of a vetting process.
Mm. I like the idea that you have I was impressed that you just said you have a liaison at the water department. So you've made a big enough move here that they know you. And
yes.
Now when you call, the water department knows it's y'all and can work with you. So then the process then extends out to the municipal organization.
Yeah, exactly. And that's – so we work with – at least 15 or 16 different cities, most of those in Michigan, but we have a liaison at all of them. We're not all of them, but like for most of them, where if we have a problem, you know, we need some information about a case, you know, our customer service person can just email them or call them even and just say, hey, I need this information. Can you send it to me? And that mm-hmm. also like makes things quicker as far as helping people, because there's no point in like having all this like software that we've built and this whole like somewhat streamlined process for helping people if people become the stumbling block in the process. And so we did the whole liaison thing, because I used to have to call Detroit and sit on the customer service line for 45 minutes at a time. And, you know, even though we were paying $1,000 worth of bills at a time when we did that, but, you know, there was no person to call at that time. But I was wasting a lot of time doing that. So I, you know, got on the horn and found some people. Actually, through Code for America, I got linked to the city of Detroit CIO, and she referred me to some people in the water department that became champions for us and got us that person to work with or whatnot. So
that's really cool, because yeah. like you say, you write all this custom software, you're trying to scale a system, and it certainly then it hits a remote procedure call that takes 45 minutes, which is Tiffany gets on the phone.
Right.
I mean, why did I write all this software and now I have to sit on hold?
Exactly. And so that's not a thing anymore, fortunately.
That's so great. And you're paying the water company. Like, to be clear, people aren't like rolling into your offices and they don't get a check. You literally pay their bills. So the bill goes away for their issue or their problem, as opposed to you paying a check personally to them.
Right, right. And so the way it's designed, so we've had an interesting sort of situation as far as being how some of our banking is set up, but the way our system is actually designed, by using something called Synapse Pay, we were able to just like write software again that if I press a button, I can wire money to Detroit or wire money to Baltimore. But, you know, most of the time, like, we don't engage that. It just ends up being like a credit card payment or something. Because right. that's more like for chunking bits of money and then just telling them like, hey, a wire is coming through for $10,000 for these people. But again, no, we don't.
So you can send it in a batch and say, here's the batch, and then they can do the accounting as opposed to little amounts here and there.
Exactly, exactly. And so that ends up being like more efficient. But we also just, you know, if someone comes to us, they've got all the information together and the case is pretty easy, we can just pay it on the fly with a credit card for them. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's really interesting to read the stories. You can go up to the website and check this out. Some of the stories are really interesting because you might be listening and you might be saying, as a listener of the podcast, like, well, you know, people shouldn't get in these situations, or how did this even happen? Why don't you just pay your bill? You have a really interesting story here where a gentleman was mailed an outstanding water bill. He had thought when he rented the house, as we've all seen before, I've rented houses where the water and the sewage and the utilities were included It turns out everything was included except water. And he didn't find out that the water wasn't included until the water got shut off. And, you know, I've had that happen where I thought the cable was included and suddenly the cable shuts off. Fortunately, it wasn't the water. But it can totally happen. And then you're retired, you're maybe on disability. Mm-hmm. This gentleman had cancer, and you just can't spare the $250 to pay your water bill.
Exactly. And that happens every day to people.
Yeah. And then when you fix that hiccup, then those monthly manageable bills go down to maybe a range of $40 that someone potentially can manage. And it all started with you on Twitter, apparently, saying this is a problem. There must be a way to solve this with software.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we started off with, like I said, a really dinky, ugly website that was taped together with, I mean, even the donor form to say how much you were going to give was literally just a page designed with Bootstrap that was connected to a Google spreadsheet. And so we just like hacked the variables, whatever, the form variables, to send it to the spreadsheet. And that was our database mm-hmm. originally, because we didn't have time. Like, me and Christy had entirely different jobs. We didn't have time to do all this infrastructure at first. We didn't even collect money from people originally. We just would give you instructions on how to pay, and you would mm-hmm. send us the confirmation number, and we would send that to the person that got the help. So it was designed to just be like a thing that if it worked, great. But if it didn't, you know, we could just, everything would just go away mm-hmm. and forget about it. So
what's so impressive is that you saw a problem, you solved the problem, you were doing a whole other job, a whole other life. And fast forward 5 years later, you're still doing it. The human utility has grown, has hired, there's multiple people working with you. And you use software to make people's lives better. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't think I'd be doing this 5 years later, but, you know, it's a problem that's, you know, ongoing. Many millions of people have problems affording their water bills and utility bills in general in the United States. And it's a thing that needs to keep going as long as we can mm-hmm. help with folks. So,
well, people can follow you at twitter.com/Tiffany with an I, and they can check out the Human Utility at humanutility.org. Thank you so much, Tiffany Ashley Bell, for chatting with me today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.